Well, good evening. We have a lecture here tonight on the GPM. And this is the 28th of February, A.D. 13. Now, the difficulty with this lecture that I'm about to make to you is it's liable to bring your GPM loose from its moorings. And if so, I'm very sorry for that. I'm very sorry for it. But we will be able to pick it up as we go along, so don't feel too upset. GPM. What is this? The Goals Problem Mass. That's what it stands for. Why is it the Goals Problem Mass? It is that mass which accumulates after the postulation of a goal, resulting in problems. Only these problems are not problems of postulate counter postulate, but their identity counter identity. In handling the GPM, we are actually handling identities. Now let me put you in focus with regard to where we have gone in processing. The first processing, resulting in clears, was simply a key out clear, getting somebody to confront his bank and his actions on a gradient scale. And that is as old as 1947. Now, as we move forward, we find that clears, as we move forward in this technology, we find that clears were not continuous, permanent, and stable as the years went along, and that anything from 3 days to many years after being cleared, something would bite, something would cave back in, something would happen, and they would cease to be clear. All right. What is this something? Well, this something is actually what made them a non-clear in the first place, the goals problem mass. Now, an individual goes through this type of cycle and action. He makes a postulate. He becomes an identity to make the postulate stick. And in the process of doing that, he is opposed by various elements out of his own fancy or the determination of others, which causes an opposition identity to materialize. And the presence of the opposition makes the individual believe that to accomplish his goal, he must now become another different identity in order to handle the new opposition which has appeared. And because he is this new, different identity, all on the same goal, a new opposition identity occurs in his vicinity. And because this second opposition has now occurred, he believes that it is incumbent upon him, either because he is losing or winning, to assume a third identity in sequence. He assumes this identity, and as soon as he assumes that, this new identity, he now has a new opposition form. Well, I'll give you an idea. We mean opposition like this. A man decides to be a smoker. Let's not put it on the GPM base. Let's put it very finite. A man decides to smoke. He therefore becomes an identity known as a smoker. You've seen them in the ads. They look very placid. If they smoke cigarettes, they chase pretty girls, and if they smoke pipes, they chase fireplaces, you know? And we've seen this. Whatever this identity was, he's assumed this identity, and then he gets married, and his wife objects to his being a smoker, so now he has an opposition known as a wife. So he assumes a new identity, which is a dominating husband, in order to handle the identity wife. But now we have a new identity show up. We have something called the Ladies Aid Society. And his wife has joined that, and their combined forces are going to cause him to stop smoking. So now he has to become a wealthy, self-determined individual. You see that? And the Ladies Aid Societies then get a bunch of quacks, members of the AMA, together, and they say that if you smoke, it produces cancer. They don't know what produces cancer, but they say that smoking does. That's the ghost shirt messianic thing. They have no solution to it. They can't cure it, so they pick on something, and they say, well, everybody spits in the water, so that's what causes typhoid fever. They don't know, you see. So now he has a counter-identity called the American Medical Association, you see? And that's an identity. So this fellow now, in desperation to handle this situation, becomes a political genius, you see? Because you have to be a political genius these days to handle the AMA. That's the only place where they operate effectively. They don't operate effectively in the operating room anymore, only in Congress. So here he is now, a genius, you see, a political genius. Now, the political genius runs into an opposition party. So you have an opposition party, the Democrats. You see, that's the next op term. And that's about the high tide of the whole thing. Let us say, no reference to the number of items you really have. You've got a deterioration of this situation. He now starts getting lesser identities, and the opposition on the subject starts to get bigger. So he says he becomes then a ward politician. And the opposition, in this particular case, is a ward politician, becomes the nation. And then he becomes an idea called political bribery. And his opposition is the world. And then he becomes a fellow who can't stand the idea of smoke. And the opposition is the atom bomb. You see, this is the term op term list I'm giving you, but I'm giving it from the goal upwards, not as you, the auditor, contacted. All right, well, let's take it now at the point of the a fellow who can't stand smoke versus the atomic bomb, which is the most smoking thing there is on the planet, you see. And those are the first two terminals you run into. The first two items you run into, RIs. And the first terminal you run into for the pre-clear is a fellow who can't stand smoke. And the opposition you run into is the atomic bomb. So as you list this goal opposed list, you run into the atomic bomb, and he says, that's the most smoking thing I can think of. The goal is to smoke or to be a smoker, so therefore I am the atomic bomb. Of course, you're immediately backwards, instantly backwards, because the first items you run into, the goal has gone into a deterioration on the terminal side and an amplification on the op-terminal side. So the amplification of the op-term means that it is the top dog type of item, and the individual as the term is the degraded type of item. You never quite know what you're going to run into. It isn't fair for an auditor to totally make up his mind so that no listing or anything else can prove him wrong, because it's the mechanical facts of listing. I'm just talking now about the GPM, not so much how you audit it. That is what it looks like. That is what it looks like. From a standpoint of making the postulate to be a smoker, going through these various phases as terminals and meeting these various oppositions. Well, now we know that a problem, the reason it's called a goals problem mass, is we know that a problem is a very balanced situation. A consistent problem is one is consistent and continuous only because it is so well balanced between its two poles. In other words, the amount of violence contained in each one of the sides of the problem are more or less equal, so the problem continues. Well, when we look at a GPM, we find actually that it is composed of black masses, and that is said advisedly. That you say, what is a mass? Well, a mass is a mass. If you had a bunch of black cotton or something of the sort heaped up in the middle of a floor, that is what the GPM looks like. Of course, that whole black mass is composed of these little parts, terminals and opposition terminals, and each one of those is a black mass. Well, now, we say a problem consists of postulate, counterpostulate, which means an intention versus an intention. And the husband wants to go to the movies, the wife doesn't want to go to the movies, so we have a problem. And if their determination were equal, it would be an unresolvable problem. These determinations were exactly equal, and it would hang just like that. And it would go on interfering with their married life. And it become more and more solid, more and more reinforced, and it would hang up. Now, actually, problems are almost impossible to balance in this fashion. One side is stronger than the other, and they overbalance. Therefore, the residual of 200 trillion years is composed of a few sections, a few goals, and relatively few of these items, because they have to be so delicately and intricately balanced. The opposition is hung up against the terminal, and these things have to be very, very, very carefully, delicately balanced in order to ride forward. You'll notice the odd part of it is that if you want something to ride forward in time, you make two counter-opposed efforts. You have to have effort A versus effort B counter-opposed. And if you get those things counter-opposed, it will ride forward in present time. Now, the whole GPM is tending to ride forward in present time, and its characteristic is instantaneousness, because it has no time in it. That is because every time one of these firm identities has been opposed by a firm opposition, and where the balance necessary to a hang-up has been achieved, we got a timeless situation. This thing started drifting forward in time. With each click of the clock, we weren't able any longer to overbalance one and the other. So there they are, fist against fist, incapable of being disturbed. Nothing disturbs these things. And then we get two more on top of this, and two more on top of this, and those are jammed, and then two more on top of this, and two more on top of this, and those jam, and we eventually get this situation which is riding forward in time. Actually, this goal has produced literally billions of identities. But those aren't the identities which we process. Billions of them. But they didn't hang up in time. Do you see that? Because they weren't accurately and exactly opposed. They didn't hang up in time. Only those which hung up in time are those which have to be addressed. What happened to these other identities? Well, they just dropped off and as-is and skipped it and so forth. And that's fortunate for you, because 200 trillion years, if you write it down on the wall and figure out that an identity was achieved, every three or four times a century, or even if an identity was achieved once every 100 years, you find out that you have an incalculable number of identities which have an incalculable number of oppositions, and you just never would be able to process, and they're just too many. Numerically, it is just too many. But fortunately, it's only those that were exactly balanced, the terminal is exactly intentioned against the opposition, which is exactly intentioned, that match it with absolute precision, that permits all this thing to drift forward for, well, the first one has been drifting forward for 200 trillion years. That's how old it is. Pretty moldy. But it's what saves us in processing this thing is the almost incalculable rarity with which you got a total hang-up. We don't always have the problem, I want to go to the movies, and you can't go to the movies, We don't just have that hanging. In life, ordinarily, the husband says, well, honey, actually, I think we ought to go to the movies because as we were passing the drugstore, I was going to get you a box of candy. And she said, well, I think we better go to the movies, huh? And or conversely, she breaks out a rolling pin, hits him over the head, and of course he can't go to the movies or any place else. In other words, the problem resolves itself there. See, one side overweights the other side, but you get a tenuous holding of one against the other. No matter what violence was interchanged, they tenuously hold against each other, and exactly balanced, that problem has never been solved. So the GPM could be said to be that accumulation of identities and oppositions which have never been resolved from the beginning of time. Now, of course, some of those originate in relatively modern times, but the earliest of them has been with us since the beginning of time. Now, why do we call this then the goals problem mass? Well, we call it the goals problem mass because it's generated by the effort on the part of the Thetan to execute a goal he has postulated. That's goals problem because it is in terms of an identity versus another identity which has hung up as a problem, and we call it mass because this pair banging against each other has given us in the bank mass. Goals problem mass, and that is why it is called it. All right. By the way, it's a brand new discovery in Scientology, so there is no similar terminal to be, no similar designation. There aren't even words for these terminals, for opposition terminals. I mean, this has to be new nomenclature because there is absolutely nothing to measure up to this. These things have never been observed before in the human makeup. For instance, we're new as new as this. We were the ones who identified a field. What is a field? You know, a black field or a different moving field or that sort of thing. What is this? We're the first one that ever found out people had it. And actually, although a few people have called attention to, I think beginning in about 1913, somebody mentioned the fact that some people could see pictures. I think that's about the earliest reference on it. The lock, secondary, and engram are all original with us. And then we take it one step deeper and we get the mass, which is the result of having an identity. And we call that a circuit. And oddly enough, it'll continue to talk, it'll continue to think, it'll continue to do a lot of things when energized, and we find people with these circuits and so forth. Those circuits are fringe that we normally see in operation, are fringe parts of the GPM, and we're actually looking at the GPM when we look at circuits. Well, we are the ones who have found these things, and therefore our terminology for them is quite new, but it can be nothing else because never having been discovered anyplace else, they of course had no terminology. Now, look at the cycle processing. Getting back to that. First, we started to make clears by accustoming people to look at their banks and be able to see that bank. And this just these little pictures. And to the degree that they could confront those pictures, you would get a key out. That is, the individual no longer let them bother him. And going in on a gradient scale, you could do this today. It's long and arduous. You could get the individual more and more accustomed to confronting his bank. And more and more accustomed to it. You could show it to him, get him so he could see it, so he could face it. And the next thing you know, he'd see more and more things in it, more and more things in it, be less and less flinching. And next thing you know, his needle on the E-meter over here, his needle would go clean, and he would have a keyed out clear. You could do that today. Actually, you can tackle the GPM this way. You can take 3M and you can call off items. You don't have to. You can just say, after you've listed the list, you can say to the pre-clear, which one of these is your item? He tells you the wrong item. He never tells you the right one, by the way. Not unless he's about one goal down. You've already got his cognition levels picking up. He's beginning to see these things. Auditors shouldn't be dissuaded, however. They should go on and get the item that reads. But anyway, you say, which one of these is your item? And he'll inevitably, particularly on the first goal and part of the second, call it wrong. And now if you took that item and you opposed it, you know, it didn't read, and you opposed it in some way, you're doing listing as auditing, and you got another list, and you said, which one of these is your item? And the individual said, well, it's that one. That's wrong, too, because this list, by the way, doesn't RR. And then you said, all right, which one of these is your item? And the individual would say, oh, so-and-so. There's some chance that you would produce a keyed out clear. It's quite interesting, but there's some chance that you would do so. There's always an equal chance, or maybe a superior chance, that you would continue to drop him through into heavy areas and earlier GPMs, which made him go clank. You know, I mean, just caved him right in, just dragged him into zones and areas where he had no business being. So this is no sure cure method, but you're going to hear from time to time, as the years go on, some wild Indian jumping up suddenly and learning how to make a keyed out clear and trying to pass for the real thing. We've been making keyed out clears now for 16 years. There's no particular reason to make any more of them. Now, there's been enough worry to us. Thank you. What I'm getting at here is our first address then was really to Locke's. And I almost fell out of my auditor's chair back in 1947 or 48. When I found out that people could confront their birth. Now, those engrams weren't run. See? They could see prenatals. They could see this. They could see that. They could see the other things. And actually, it was less confront. I was throwing them into it more and more heavily. See? And I was not building them up. And when I started to train auditors, they didn't handle this smoothly. And the next thing you know, we were involved totally with mechanics. And we were not involved in any way, shape, or form with the preclear. You see the difference. So therefore, we got PCs going into engrams, which were very hard to run indeed. And this got us into Dianetics in 1950. Now, we can do some marvelous things running engrams. There's no doubt about that. And quite remarkable running engrams. But do you recognize that every individuality which this individual has had all the way along the track, every person he has been, had a complete bank? Now, look at that. Do you know how much bank there is in this current lifetime in a PC? Well, there's a lot of bank, man. There's lots of pictures, lots of locks, lots of secondaries, and you sit down to run out just one lifetime, all the engrams in one lifetime, and you're really biting off a large chaw of tobacco. That's a big bite. I don't think you could do it. Takes too long. You realize that every 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years he's accumulated, if he were in a body line, he's accumulated a complete bank. You know, complete bank as we see it in lifetime. And that for every, well, let's say three times a century or once a century or some intermediate figure, from here back 200 trillion years at least, see, 200 trillion years at least, for every one of these lifetimes, he has a complete set of what he has in this lifetime. You understand how many pictures that is? It gets into some astronomical figure. And if you had to erase each one of those pictures, you'd be in a bad way as an auditor. In other words, erasing the whole bank got mixed up with keying out the bank. And the defeat of Dianetics was simply, to the degree it was defeated, was simply undertaking to wash out, to erase the whole bank, not to key it out. You understand a big difference there. The early techniques were very feathery, very lightweight. The PC did just exactly what he could find. I remember vividly getting a PC to go out and walk in the office 3, 4, 5, 6 times and shut his eyes each time and see if he could see a picture of the office until he finally could see a lock of the office. And then I'd ask him if he could confront it and what he could confront in that. In other words, I made him make his own pictures. These were people with fields and so forth, but I hadn't myself seen a field, so I didn't know how to get people out of them when I found they were in them. I could get people out of them as long as I didn't know they were in them. You see? But then when it was finally pointed out to me by people that they were in fields and therefore couldn't see pictures, I bought this because I'd never had any difficulty before. I remember one time, Mary Sue had a big win this way one time. We were just fooling around out in Phoenix, and she said she'd never felt any effort. Ah, old effort process, you know. So I said, oh, you never felt any effort. Well, let's see. So I had to go around, and oh, she's quite featherweight, and pick up the heavy end of the couch. And then walk back and see if she could feel the effort of picking it up without picking it up. Got that? And I made her do this and then feel the effort of doing it and then pick it up. And she was actually, you know, Phoenix sort of warm. But she finally, she got away from it and she could feel the effort. She could get the idea of the effort. And it's the first time she ever had any idea of effort. Actually, she hasn't had any trouble with any recognition of it since. That was actually the type of processing which the earliest processing was. Walk in the room and close your eyes and see if you can see a picture of the room. Oh, you couldn't? All right, go on. Go on outside and walk in the room. Take a look at the room. Shut your eyes. Now, just tell me everything you did coming in the room and everything you did coming in the room. Can you see the picture? You can't do it yet. All right, go outside and walk. You got the idea. It was just the idea you can got pictures and you can confront them. That was the whole idea. Here, effort. You can lift up the couch and then go over and get the idea of lifting up the couch and feel the effort of lifting up the couch after you've lifted up the couch. You see, actually, that's getting the mental image picture of the effort is what it is. As a kid, you probably have leaned against two sides of the door with the backs of your hands. You ever do that? You get your two backs of your hands against the two jambs of the door and say, hold yourself there very solidly. You tell somebody to get... The second that you do this and step out of the door, the residual effort in the muscles will make your arms go up without volition. Well, that's quite interesting because that's actually not a muscular action that's taking place. That's a mental image picture action. You've postulated that the arms go out and they haven't gone out, so therefore the image starts running out. You can do that with effort. You can do it with all these things. Now, that was key out. That was key out as opposed to erasure. You get a big difference here because this is where we started making key out clears, 1947. And key out clearing is successful, but it isn't stable. Now, the two things which had to be brought together occurred then with the first book, which is the erasure of a mental image picture. And usually this was done without much ARC with the PC. And when there was not much ARC with the PC, you didn't get a chance to build up anything with the PC. His confidence did not increase. Yes, you could get rid of the immediate somatics. You could get rid of the illnesses which were coming directly from that engram. Yes, they were being caused by a specific engram which could be located. And yes, the individual wasn't likely to have them again. Yeah, all these things are true. But the PC's ability to confront the bank had not been especially raised. And in view of the fact that it had not been raised, you did not get the key out clear phenomena. But look, this started us on a long run. Next thing you know, we're into past lives. Very unpopular subject, very unpopular subject. People don't like to be reminded of their last death rattles. That's about all it amounts to. It isn't that the church or state is against it. They obliterate their memories, and they sell everybody on the idea you only live but once. That sure makes nothing out of people, doesn't it? You're only 70 years long when actually you're 200 trillion years long. That's a method of making nothing out of things. So we got into past lives, and that was very unpopular. I remember old Joe Winter. He made a classic statement. I would rather err with Gallon than be right with Hubbard. And we actually passed a ruling that we mustn't investigate past lives one time. That was very, very fascinating. Imagine a uproar. the popularity of technology. Anytime you worry about popularity when you're doing research, and pervert the truth just so that you can be patted on the back as a very smart fellow or something of the sort, or a very agreeable fellow or a well-liked fellow, you're heading for being a very badly hated fellow. So there we were into the soup, and with the idea of erasure, addressing this to past lives, myself and other auditors were engaged all through 1951, exploring the length and breadth of the track. Exploring the length and breadth of the whole track. Wow. The FDA is probably spinning itself in right now in the old book, History of Man or What to Audit. That was one of the books they seized over there. I hope they read it. I hope they read it and get overts on it, you know, and say, it isn't true, this grim weeper. You know, boo-hoo-hoo, you know. Eyes red for the next, I hope it doesn't key out. I don't wish them any hard luck. I just hope they get stuck there forever. Anyhow, you can imagine it. They get overts on a book like that. God, some people are adventurous. Anyway, we concluded, nah, I concluded no. Yeah, we could find things. I have found things on the track, that Grim Weeper amongst them, that you can get 16 dials of drop. 16 dials. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all consecutive. Consecutive falls. Just down, down. In other words, a whole tone arm drop like this. Down, 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 down. This thing going on, falling, 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 falling. That's just one fall on one of those old engrams. You like that? That's steep, man. That's what some of those beach engrams will fall. Do wonderful things with them. I audited a guy 9 hours one time. I did a lock scan. I did an engram scan in order to lock him up in the engram he was stuck in. No trick. Found the engram he was stuck in. He was stuck as a clam at high tide with the sunlight shining in his face. Oh, my golly, what it didn't do for that bird. It took about 9 hours to erase this engram. Marvelous change in the individual. Heard from him the other day, by the way. He's getting back on the bandwagon again. He feels he's been out of it too long. And so on. There are remarkable effects to be gained from that. And that was the main trouble. You could get terrific effects, but we weren't making clears. What happened to the clears, you know? Well, what happened to them is that we were on a different approach. Different approach. We're trying to erase the whole ruddy lot. And actually, I backed off and began to investigate something else. And this became Scientology. I finally found out what we were investigating. We were investigating a spirit. I don't care what you call it, Thetan or not. It's just a spirit, in final analysis. And we found that the spirit was the man. Now, by George, you know that's quite a discovery, because it's long since been forgotten. These people going around talking about my spirit. I know that I'm out of my head, we heard the early Thetan Weedy say, because I am over there in that corner. Oh, yeah, you're over there, all right. Oh. No, the man is the spirit. All there is alive in man is the spirit. He is. And probably for the first time in 2,500 years studied the subject of exteriorization. There's undoubtedly no successful study of it before. Psychiatry, by the way, had heard of exteriorization. They considered it an insane manifestation, which was some sort of a delusion, because people would tell them they were out of their heads at a distance. And they knew this was crazy, so they never investigated any further than that. But it had been remarked that some people were in this condition. Now, this study was this much of a hill climb. Man no longer believed in this period of time. Man no longer believed that there was such a thing as a soul. Well, I mean, probably in early Christianity, it would have been a ball. Probably some of those fellows still thought of themselves as spirits. They didn't say, I will have to be good because my spirit won't go to heaven or something, you know. They probably thought of themselves as spirits. They said, well, if I'm not good, me, getting out of my skull, won't go to heaven. That's the way they probably figured it. But all that had been lost. And not only that had been lost, but man had totally lost a grip on this thing called the spirit. It was something esoteric. They believed in God because they'd been taught to, and so on. They had no reality on this situation at all. 1952 saw an advent of exteriorization. And that was for the first time in 2,500 years that we have any record of it all. Buddha was the last one who was dealing with this. Now, we didn't come into this because we were following Buddha. We came into this because we were studying the truth. That's always something to remember. We are not necessarily the inheritors of Buddhism. Or you're liable to lay yourself a wide open trap there. We walked into the side and found that there were certain truths and that this condition had existed and had been known 2,500 years ago and was called Bodhi. Bodhi, hence Buddha. And called Bodhi because when he first did it and blew out of his head, he was sitting under a Bodhi tree. And that's where we get Buddha. Well, when I was fooling around with this, it was sitting under a yucca tree. So we should call it yucca. See? We should all be yuccas, but I don't think that sounds very good, so we'll skip that. I didn't have such an approach to it. The only approach I had to it at all was the fact that I was trying to locate what was it that was looking at these pictures, because I found the pictures were absolutely inexhaustible in number. That's a terrible fact. You find that they're infinite number, and nobody could erase them. No matter how good your technology of erasure was, you certainly better find out what you're erasing with. And what we were erasing with was a thetan, a spirit. It was the thetan who was doing this. So, of course, I thought, isn't this interesting? All we have to do is exteriorize this fellow from the middle of all these pictures, and he'd be clear. And sure enough, you can produce a 1 minute clear very easily. You could tell somebody to be 3 feet back of his head, and then tell him to be 3 feet back of the black mass he was in, and he would be. In very lots of cases, he would be. The first auditing process on exteriorization, which has great validity, was figured out by Evans Farber. And he came up and he sat all night outside my window until I finally would come out and listen to this command. And I did, and he fed it to me, and I went 3 feet back of me head. And there was yucca trees thereabout and a few palm trees. I guess it's the conflict as whether or not we should be called palms or yuccas. You see, that makes us abandon both, you see. And he says, you see, it works. It works. You're right, you know. You can't exteriorize. And here's the command. It's try not to be 3 feet back of your head. Of course, he'd run into the negative flow. And he'd figured it out very carefully. He'd taken some of the recent PKBs, and he figured it all out. And he figured out the exact command that would produce this phenomenon. And bang. So I blew him out of his head. He blew me out of my head, and I blew him out of his head. That was two exteriors that we had to our credit. And so on. Anyway, all this was very interesting, but nobody'd stay outside. Sometimes they'd stay outside for 3 days. And then they'd be driving down the road 100 feet above their car, and they'd hit a traffic light or something of the sort. And then they'd forget they were driving the car and go off and look at something or other, and the traffic jam would occur, and somebody start manhandling the body into an ambulance. Something like that would occur, or just start to occur, and the individual say, oh, no, nobody's going to take my body away from me. And he'd go back in his head, and you couldn't get him out again. You say, try not to be 3 feet back of your head, and he'd say, ha, 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 ha. Well, out of this, I developed the theory of havingness. It was obvious that havingness was more important to a thetan than entrappedness. Isn't that interesting? But of course, somebody who is trapped in the middle of spikes doesn't like to be trapped. But somebody who is only mildly uncomfortable, doesn't mind it so much. And when it comes to losing the body and going out of communication with everybody and losing the game and getting death re-stimulated and all that, well, they'd rather stay on their heads. This still has an interesting series of workability. I had an insane woman one time, exteriorized her, had an intelligent conversation with her, got all the facts of the case and what it was all about. She went back into her head again. I did that on several occasions. Here's the point. The point is that exteriorized out of his bank, the Thetan is sane, and in his bank, he's nuts. That's it. He has tremendous abilities, and the funny part of it is, as you'll find in the Philadelphia lectures, a Thetan's abilities are all measured, taped, everything else. We know what a Thetan can do, all that sort of thing. See, I've researched all that, and all our work since has been sort of in reverse. Now, recently, 1958, 1957, we started producing keyed-out clears using techniques which were a cross between being able to confront and a mechanical erasure. See, the two techniques at the same time still produced a keyed-out clear, but using them both in combination, a keyed-out clear was produced. Do you see that? All right. Now, I want you to get this now. With 3M, we're producing an erasure clear. See, this is a different thing. It's an ultimate, near ultimate. You see why? Well, having found the exact mechanics of this GPM, I can make all these masses, you see, as you audit the fellow, suddenly discharge. And, of course, they can't hang up. And the next pair of masses, they suddenly discharge and they can't hang up. Do you know what you do every time you blow a couple of those items? Well, there probably isn't just one lifetime packed into one of those items. It may be dozens. It may be hundreds of lifetimes. And every one of those lifetimes has a bank as long as this current lifetime's bank. We're not blowing locks. We're not blowing engrams. We're not chipping off a few circuits. We're blowing packages of lifetimes. And actually, you can do it in 35 minutes, finding one item. Isn't that remarkable? Because I found out the only way it can hang up, there's no way for it to reassemble itself. And I myself, now I've got terrific subjective reality on how this is done. You blow it, and nothing can hang up. And they just go. They don't go back on the track. They just go. Because there's nothing making them hang up and nothing generating the creativeness inherent in them. So there's nothing to keep them created. And that's all. That's actually what you're doing. It's astounding. It's an utterly astounding fact. Every time you look at one of these things, all right, we run into this item called a smoker versus a wife, see? And we find this RI, a smoker. And we find, this is the bottom two on the chain. We've come all the way down the chain. And we find the opposition, a wife. Well, a charge, when it goes off of this meter, is the only charge that was holding both of those pair in suspension. And in view of the fact that when the meter charge went out, you had nothing to keep them in suspension in time. And that wasn't much charge. It just went fst, fst, fst. And you get to the wife. The goal itself is probably your next thing up. And the next item you get is the goal to be a smoker. And that goes, pew, 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 and fire. You're not going to find anything of that GPM sticking around to amount to anything. There'd be a few little locks and a few little this and that. In other words, we've gone right down the center channel of that GPM. That's what's caused the blow. These GPM items are each one a package of lifetimes. Each one. Several identities, usually crowded into each one. And they've summated one way or the other under some heading. and therefore they register on the e-meter. And the opposition, there's just countless numbers of oppositions connected with that one opposition phrase. These two things are in total balance with that rocket reed. They blow one against each other, and they're gone. There is no way to hold that. There is no goal there to hold it. There is no bottom two terminals to hold it. The rest of the GPM goes. But you've got to come all the way down, or you don't find the bottom terminal. So you blow this charge, this charge, this charge, this charge, this charge, blow the bottom two charge, blow the goal charge, and that's the end of that GPM. You'll sit there and look at a free needle. Now, you haven't got keyed out clear. This guy isn't going to cave in another 3 years. There's nothing. He's going to have to live 200 trillion to get that many accidental hang-ups, see? It's not permanent. It's only probably worth another 200 trillion, see? Well, I'll buy that. That's good enough for me at the moment. Now, here's the composition of the GPM. When you first enter the case, you find a person who is usually so agitated in this lifetime that you couldn't even find the basic goal of it. You've got to give him some auditing to smooth him out, to get him up so that he can confront things enough so that you've got this lifetime. Well, one of the best answers to that's problems intensive, something like this. Now, when you start making a goals list, the goal itself being a postulate can be read all through this GPM. So it's the commonest read to the GPM. So that's why you can find a goal reading before you can find an item reading. It travels on the wings of thought. And it's a common denominator to a whole GPM. Very simple. Your next action, then, is to find this fellow's goal. You get this goal firing. Now, what would this goal oppose? And you'll run into either the first terminal or upterm. Each item found has to be a terminal or upterm on its own merits, not because of how it was opposed. And then from that, you find the next item. And sometimes people wanting to make things complicated give me a headache. Today I found out that people are packaging 3M with four items. You don't do 3M that way. You have a big line plot, and this is terminals, and that's opterms. And you just put down every terminal you find, and every opterm you find on the line plot in the chronology of found. And that is what you do. And if that is too simple, I'm sorry. But that is the way it is. You don't make four-way packages and then take each one that is left over and try to oppose it independently and get every... Oh, Christ, you know, why do something like that? Look, all it is a spiral staircase. You enter this, you find the goal by reaching to the bottom of this thing with an E-meter and find the common denominator to it all. And then you wonder what the goal opposed, and it runs you into the top of the spiral staircase, and then that gets you to the next terminal, and then that gets you to the op-term, and that gets you to the terminal, and that gets you to the op-term, and that gets you to the next terminal, and that gets you to the next op-term, and that gets you to the next terminal, and that gets you to the next op-term, and that gets you to the goal, and it all goes, it's going boom, boom, boom as you're getting these things, and then it all goes, and that's the end of that. You got a free needle. Now, why you want to make it more complicated than it is? It's awful simple. Yeah, you say, but every once in a while you wind up with something you won't package. Oh, do you? Well, if you find something here that won't package, you're going to find an extra item over here that would fit up there anyhow, and the PC will recognize it. So why worry? Just put them down chronologically. Put them all down chronologically on your terminals and opterms on the plot, and they'll all come out right eventually. The thing sometimes will get down to here, and the terminal that was missing up here will suddenly come off of this. But if you put it here, it also belongs here, but the PC will say, hey, that belongs there. So you just write it in there, too. Don't get so complicated, man. I worked it out so it's so simple. Now you're going to spend the rest of your life making this thing involved? Look, the best universe doesn't need your help. It's got us involved enough already. It's actually a very simple mechanism. What happens when you get to the bottom of this GPM? What's it look like from there? I'll tell you a secret. The next GPM alongside of it is what the first GPM would not oppose. And the next GPM below that may be an opposite to the second one found. But your GPMs run in pairs, just like items run in pairs. And your GPM is hung up on the counter interaction of the goals. Only it's hung up on a four-way packet. So you've got a positive, and you've got a negative, and you've got a not oppose, not oppose. The first two GPMs you'll find are on the postulate not oppose each other. I don't care what the goals are, they just won't oppose each other. They're pals, and they're hung together by affinity, and the couple below them are hung together by opposites. But this tells you something interesting. It tells you that when you first enter the PC's goal channel, you actually might enter any one of the four goals, any one of the first four goals. Now, somebody, eager beaver around the organization, actually ought to build a GPM so they can see what it looks like and use colored spheres. And if they use colored spheres, these colored spheres would look like this. You'd have a rope of spheres. These are green spheres, all hung together. And with toothpicks or something, they would connect another rope of green spheres with black stripes. That's just to show you it's the same GPM, but the black striped ones are opterms. Cowboy in the black hat, you know? So you get these two ropes, and they're hung together. The goal is down at the bottom. And then they go terminal, opterm, matching each other, nickety-knock, up to the top of this thing. All right, that's two ropes of spheres. That's one GPM section or cycle. See, that whole thing is hung up on one goal. Now, let's take two more ropes, just as though we strung these great big, like croquet balls or something, and we strung these things all together. Let's have pink ones, pink croquet balls, and let's make two ropes of pink croquet balls and hang them together with toothpicks, the two opposite balls on the rope, you see. Rope A, rope B. So the first ball on rope A is pinned against the first ball on rope B, don't you see? And that goes down, balls opposite balls, till we get to the bottom of this thing. And at that point, we have another goal, an entirely different goal. But oddly enough, these two chains of two are interrelated. So we've got these two GPMs. Well, we hang them smashed together like that. They actually, their items don't oppose the items across, but the goals at the bottom are connected. They're pals. They have affinity. Now, let's take two more such sets. In other words, a set of two ropes of spheres with a goal at the bottom. And another set of two ropes and spheres with a goal at the bottom, and we hang them on to the bottom of these first two. Now we've got four sets, haven't we? We've got four goals. Do you see that? We got four goals. One goal influences two ropes of similar color, which each item of which opposes the item on the other rope. You got that picture? All right. In doing a goals assessment, you will have many things fire. You're liable to see many rocket reads. 2, 3, 4, 5. Some of these things fire very slightly. Some of them fire quite well. Do you know that you actually could be on one of the other three rather than the first one up? Now, as we hang up this GPM, let us say that the pink one here that I described first is number one up. And the other one hangs just out of phase with it, just a little bit lower. But do you know its goal will also read with an occasional rocket read? It may be tiny, but it occasionally will read. The one you want is the pink one, and that'll rocket read every time. And yet you're liable to enter this thing on the basis here of the second GPM. You see, and you're only going to get little reads, and that's going to sweat you to death running that one. It'll follow all the rules, but you're running the little tiny one, and you should be running the big one. See? Because it looks small to you, because the reeds aren't very big. It'd be very easy running this first one, the pink one, whereas you're running maybe the red one that I described. Now, oddly enough, theoretically, you could also get down to the lower two. And boy, that would read a flick once in a blue moon. And if you tried to run one of those things, it would practically kill the PC. You never would get it to rocket read. Mount anything, it'd be more like a tick or something, but you'll have a trace of it. Now, you get a family of goals, then, which have these GPMs connected with them. It's a family of goals. And these goals will all have something in common. A smoker, let us say, is your top goal that was ready to be plucked. But right alongside of it, and just a bit junior to it as far as your meter reads the first time, but actually far beefier when you really get to running it, is a second goal, to be a fireball. Now, actually, a fireball won't oppose a smoker, and a smoker won't oppose a fireball. It's a not opposed situation. And then we get down below a smoker, and we find its associated goal, this third GPM pair of ropes that I are talking about, that third one, and we're going to have something like to be a pure man without bad habits. This is just talking off the cuff, you see. And that's going to oppose a member of the YMCA. See, to be a member of the YMCA. We don't care what these goals are. There's four goals. These two down here won't oppose each other. And the two close to the top up here, they won't oppose each other. But there's an opposite one down underneath it. Isn't that interesting? So these goals go by association. But not opposed is the keynote. But they all have something in common, even though they're opposites. You understand? The first pair that you run into is to have real bad habits. The next pair you get will have real good habits. There'll be something about the next pair. Each one of them will have that in common. And that's how they get locked up, one upon the next. Consider it quite interesting that there's a frequency amongst GPMs, which is the message I'm giving you this evening, which is rather amusing because you're all engaged in trying to find the first goal, see? I'm already telling you, well, the GPM goes in frequencies. You're trying to find the first pair of the dumbbell that goes together. You got a goal opposed, and gee, will that ever fire, and will you ever find the next one against, and so on. I'm just telling you offhandedly that there's four sets of these things which are set in amongst themselves, and that isn't the end of it, not by a long ways, because there are other of these GPMs. Your saving grace is the deeper you go, the higher toned the PC is. It's a mechanical proposition. It isn't such much a matter of confront. It's what he's confronted, although you have to hold his morale up to keep his meter reading. And you got these next ones, and of course there's other sets of GPMs, but not an infinity. Now, I consider it very interesting that the possibility exists of getting the first goal that you get on this PC of being actually the second goal ready to be run. That's the misbehavior, the difficulty of the goal, that sort of thing. There may be a very available goal, which is right up to the top, which you just missed. Well, what I'm telling you about all this, if you have two GPMs which not oppose each other, if your first item that you encounter, that's the top items, is senior and opposition, and junior, you see, and degraded in terminal. See, the op term is more smacking of the goal than the terminal. That's the truth of the matter. You see, the PC is pulled less and less away from the goal, and the opposition has become more and more like the goal as he has accumulated masses. Well, I consider this very interesting because it gives you a way to get goals. You can dream up things of that because he considers his own goal as an opposition. In other words, the opposition terminal is more germane to his goal than he is. So you get such questions as, what goal would be impossible to achieve? All right, let's say you find a goal that sporadically goes bang and that sort of thing and really won't prove out and won't rocket read. You realize you might have the not a, because you said impossible to achieve, you might have the second mass over here. You might have the goal of it. It's not ready to be run yet. But you say, what goal would not oppose the goal you just found? And all of a sudden, he will give you immediately the family goal, you know, that is ready to be found. Do you see what the gates that this opens to goal finding? This is a theoretical lecture, a descriptive lecture, not a lecture of a whole series of techniques. I'm just showing you here. Now, what about this top one? Well, you get such questions as, what action in present time makes you go frantic if you fail at it? See? You'll find out that's always a common denominator, the goal ready to be run. It is very common in present time. He considers it part of his life. He possibly won't even put it down on the list because it's so much part of his life, and he does it all the time anyway, and that is his personality. But you just ask him, what does he get frantic about if he can't do it? And he'll present you with his goal. You take a series of actions like that, you could assess these things and then write goals for the point that you got. I'm not trying to give you a technique. I'm just showing you here that there, if you know these mechanics, which I've just given you on the subject of goals, if you know these mechanics, then there's a possibility you could work the PC's goal out. In other words, he may only consider that his goal would be difficult to achieve, or he may consider it something he doesn't want to have to achieve, or something he would find it very tiring if he found to do, or something that would make him very frantic if he did it. Why? Because its most representative terminal, which is closest to present time, is very, very weak. And the most representative terminal to the goal, the goal itself, is the op term, so therefore he must be fighting at this stage of the game the enemy. And so you will find it work out. He's fighting, he's busy every day of his life fighting the enemy. It's his own goal. Imagine the poor fellow that had to go up against Kaiser Bill or Hitler, who had the goal to conquer Earth. Yet, of course, he knew that was very evil, even though it was his own goal. So you get his goal, you say, all right, you knew that this made him very unhappy. You say, well, you get Hitler, see, it's an op term that fires. And you say, all right, what goal did Hitler have that would be, that you would find very antipathetic? And he gives you to conquer Earth, and that rocket reads, because that is the PC's goal. You get the idea? You get the mechanics the way it is. Now, supposing it just went tick, and it rocket read once, and then you couldn't get it to rocket read again, then the chances are that you're in the family of goals that's ready to be found, but you've got the goal of one of the other GPMs. Well, you possibly could do something like this. You could find out what wouldn't oppose it or what would be the opposite of this goal that rocket read once, and the PC gives you the right goal to be run. In other words, I'm showing you that there are elements here and there are mechanics here and in the anatomy of the GPM which bade fair to make goal finding easier and to make the GPM run out very, very well. Because you try to run out the wrong GPM first, and you're going to be in bad trouble. Because your reads are going to be bad, and everything's going to be bad. You're going to have trouble all the time, and the frequencies are going to be the same, but you won't be able to read the meter. A lot of things like that are wrong. But as far as the GPM is concerned, it's a mechanical proposition, and all you have to do is just get the charge off each pair of items, and then after you've got this GPM run, you don't run one GPM against the other GPM. But after you've got GPM 1 run, you go to GPM 2, that's from the top down counting, and you get its discharge. GPM 3 will be ready to come up. GPM 4 be ready to come up. You dish around for another goal. You'll find another set that is just waiting there to be run, and you get those things apart. And it's just blowing charge. Because if you blow that charge, you've blown up these accidental hang-ups, which are almost impossibly, mathematically, for them to have existed. That this problem, think of it, and this was what led us into the discovery of the GPM, as I realized a problem which has endured for 200 trillion years. Oh, man, that must be the most delicate balance ever known to man. That must be a pin versus a pin, both of them meeting with their points. To travel ahead this long, the balance must be so perfect that none of his livingness, not getting shot or killed or ruled by Kennedy, nothing, see, would absolutely unsettle this for 200 trillion years. Well, this is kind of a weird contraption. So I sat down and figured out what kind of a contraption that would be that would endure that way, and came up with a GPM, and it worked. Therefore, we have a mechanical address. Your job is just to get these consecutive points missing. In other words, blow the charge between these two items, and they go. You don't have to do anything more with them. It's like Humpty Dumpty. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again, but there's nothing easier than to drop an egg. All I'm asking you to do is drop a few eggs. Simple. All right. By knowing this anatomy and giving you now what I know of the GPM objectively, theoretically, I extrapolated all this from the top of the thing, and then imagine my surprise to walk in and find it this way, and even neater. It gives you a way to find goals. It tells you what you can do with goals that you have found occasionally. It tells you what kind of a terminal to expect coming up. It tells you really what you have to do in running the thing. It tells you what you're looking for. In other words, it gives you a lot of data and should give you a lot of success. The material contained in clearing will actually only be complicated to you to the degree that you try to make it complicated. Now, in just the last hour and 5 minutes or something like that, I have been able to describe to you, bangity, bangity, bang, I think so that you could duplicate it. Certainly, if you heard the lecture again, you could. Dead easy. I think you've got a good grip on what this is. I think you see what you're going up against. And so forth. This man is the riddle of the ages. What makes man the way he is? I mean, what is the bank? What is the reactive mind? What is all these things? What are they composed of? And so forth. Well, it's actually an actual fact contained in this very, very short lecture. The thing is not a very esoteric subject. You try to get more involved in it than you're involved. You try to involve it more than it needs to be involved. You try to put it together in packages which are the square root of 42, because that was, after all, the Talmud's figure. I don't know where you got all that. And you're going to have lots of trouble. I don't want you to have trouble with the thing. The thing is very, very simple. All you do is go down the spiral staircase and blow all the item packages that you run into. You don't go packaging things, you just blow them. You ask the PC-er once in a while if it confronts this and if that op terms that, and if the goal refers to that, that's just to keep him happy, not to get anything done. And you get on down to the bottom of the thing, goal blows, and you're into the next GPM, and you do the same thing, and you run that out. You got a permanent erased clear. This is a new thing. It isn't a keyed out clear. And so actually we're on the border of OT. Because, frankly, you never would have made an OT with a keyed out clear, because the whole bank that I have just described to you stood as a barrier between him and the accomplishment of those activities. And at any time he committed an overt that referred to that bank, it would have keyed in with him again. So the route is open to OT, which is be the route to total freedom. And that has just opened up here in the last few months. Thank you very much. Thank you. Good night.